The gospel today ends with the line that the Lord uses in other places, describing the reality of hell and the pains and sufferings of hell, when he says, they will throw them into the fiery furnace where there will be wailing and grinding of teeth. And this is a funny little story. Not sure it's true, but it's a good story. Anyhow, one time there was this sort of fire and brimstone preacher, and he was given a revival preaching or something like that, and he was preaching a lot about hellfire and all that sort of thing, and particularly this line about there being wailing and grinding of teeth. And there was an old man who was sitting right up front, and he was just kind of laughing the whole time. And this was really getting under the skin of the preacher, because this was really serious business to him. He was letting them have it, And so after a while, he just couldn't take it anymore. So he called out the old man right there in front of everybody. He said, "Old man, what are you laughing about? This is serious business." And the old man said, "Well," says, "there," he says, "you keep on saying there's going to be wailing and grinding of teeth, and so I'm not so worried because I don't have any teeth." And that didn't faze the preacher at all. He said, "Teeth will be provided." But on a more serious note, in this parable, and another interesting parable like we had last week, where Jesus actually explains the allegory of the parable. He explains one of the parables. There are three parables in the gospel today, and in one of them, the parable of the weeds and the wheat, he goes through and explains this parable, what everything represents. The seed and the weeds being sown by the evil one and all this sort of thing. But the point of this parable is actually that judgment and justice belongs to God. We are not the agents of divine justice. And so really be careful if you ever set yourself up to be, God's avenger or something like that. He doesn't need the help, okay? He's really got it under control. People do an awful lot of, really have done an awful lot of terrible things when they see themselves in that light. Now, that's not to say that we shouldn't point out injustice when we see it. Of course we should. There's a huge tradition. That's what the whole prophetic tradition of the people of Israel and the history of the church and, many of the great prophets, many of the great saints, were great at calling people out on injustices, and we need to do that. But to see ourselves as the ones who are going to perfect this world and set it straight and get it right is a very, very dangerous thing to do. And that's what the Lord is warning about. And it's interesting, in his own ministry, he tells us about this, and that's what the point of this parable of the weeds and the wheat is, because it's a great scandal to us. I think every Christian who's thoughtful and reflective at all is at some moment or another scandalized by the presence of evil, not only in the world, but even within, the body of the church and the faithful and believers. Like, how can this happen? It's like, didn't you sow good seed, Lord? Where are these weeds coming from, Well, of course, we know we live in a world that's fallen, ever since Adam and Eve decided to listen to the devil rather than listen to what God had commanded them. And sin has entered into the world. And so it continues even within the body of believers. And this is a great scandal in the literal sense of the word. The word scandal comes from a Greek word that means a stumbling block. Something that causes you to stumble. And I think surely every mature Christian has at some point or another, struggled with this. Maybe even questioned God about this. How can this be? How can this be? And yet the Lord saw this, again, as I said, from the very beginning, and it has existed, throughout the history of the people of Israel, throughout the history of the church. And God says, certainly we want to always work for, again, we don't want to overlook injustice or tolerate it, but I will be the judge and I will execute judgment. Not you, I will. And he says, you know, a lot of damage can be done. You know, if you start pulling up the weeds, maybe a lot of the wheat is going to come out with it. And we've seen that happen. Because there's something different about the Lord from us. As we heard in the psalm, for example, Lord, you are good and forgiving. And this beautiful line in the first reading from the Book of Wisdom. Those who are just must be kind. Those who are just must be kind. You know, kindness is one of the fruits of the Holy Spirit, one of the 12 fruits of the Holy Spirit. I encourage you to go look those up back up. Go look those up in the Catechism again. A lot of times I don't think we pay enough attention to the fruits of the Holy Spirit, because they tend to be things like kindness, things that we tend to just sort of, you know, take for granted or don't think are very serious or very important. But kindness is one of the fruits of the Holy Spirit. Peace, joy, faith. Those are other ones of the fruits of the Holy Spirit as well. And to be kind is a very, very difficult thing for us to do. Oh, it's easy enough to be kind when you want to be, right? But just trying to be kind all the time, you know? When you're in a bad mood to that person who gets on your last nerve, you know? It's pretty tough, right? It is pretty tough. It is a great spiritual practice of self-denial. You know, Jesus said, if we're going to be his disciples, we must deny ourselves, take up our cross, and follow him. And this is the kind of training that we need to have in order to await and expect the justice of God. You know, sometimes people place the idea of justice and mercy in sort of contrast with one another. But for most people, most of the time through the history of the world, the justice of God embodies his mercy. For those who are downtrodden in this world, the knowledge that God is just is an experience of his mercy. For those who are poor, for those who are abused, those who are neglected, those who are all of these sort of things, the justice of God is their great hope of his mercy. And he promises to show it to them. Probably the most beautiful example of this is in our Blessed Mother's Magnificat, that beautiful prayer of praise of God that she sings to him during the visitation. He has lifted up the lowly. He has cast the mighty from their thrones and has lifted up the lowly. And that is the experience of the mercy of God. That God is just. Yes, he's very kind and he's very patient. And his patience is motivated by that kindness, hoping and giving us every opportunity to convert, to return to him. And he keeps calling us back. But the truth and justice of God will have to shine forth. You know, that's what the wailing and grinding of teeth is about. You know, teeth will be provided. You know? If God were not just, he could not be merciful. If he did not hear the cry of the poor, if he does not hear the cry of the downtrodden and the abused and the neglected, if he does not hear those things and he does not correct those wrongs, then what is the mercy of God for those who are downtrodden and poor and neglected and abused? What is the mercy of God? And that's what his justice will shine forth someday. And that's why we have to be patient. But the early Christians looked forward to that day. You know, at least by the time of his second coming, the justice of God will shine forth. You know, when Jesus came the first time, he came in a hidden way and in humility. Practically nobody realized what was happening. But the scriptures tell us when Jesus comes again, he will come in his glory as the just judge, and every knee will bend to him. There'll be no mistaking who he is. And every wrong will be made right, and every tear will be wiped away. And the Lord will lift up the lowly. In the meantime, we should long and seek for God's justice. We should live for it. We should be models of it. It's one of the best ways to do that, actually. Those who are just must be kind. Okay? Remember that. So don't get all on your big high horse or whatever like that. I've been told that, you know, what's the best way? If you come into a dark room, what's the best way to deal with the darkness? You know, so should you try to, like, okay, how are we going to attack this darkness? Let's package it up and take it out of here. No, what's the best way to do it? Turn on the light, right? Turn on the light. That takes care of the darkness. And that's what we are called to do. But we have to realize that the Lord is the just judge. The Lord is the one who will execute judgment, and he will, and he is. We see that in the history of Israel. Again, the prophets point that out to us. And we live in expectation of this. But in patience and expectation, knowing that God's will is always for the best, even though we have a hard time a lot of times discerning that. You know, and things, we can have questions, perhaps. You know, on the cross, Jesus said, my God, why have you forsaken me? But that's actually a quotation from one of the Psalms, the beginning, the first line of one of the Psalms. And if you read the entire prayer, which of course Jesus would have had in his mind, it ends with a statement of great faith in God's goodness and in his justice. And so we live for the justice of God, even though we experience and see the reality of the weeds among the wheat. But the Lord has warned us of this, and he said, trust me, I am the just judge. I am also loving and merciful, but I will indeed lift up the lowly.